Ready, okay. Welcome this afternoon. Morning went quick. We're now in the Board of Equalization meeting of Utah County, and we have three commissioners here. Of course, we have our staff here as well, and looks like many others. We'll just start off by going down through the agenda. We have seven items on our agenda. The first one is to approve the minutes of the Board of Equalizations held on May 21st. Any concerns or thoughts on that?
Move to approve item number one.
Second.
I got a motion and a second to approve agenda item number one. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. Number two is to approve or deny a taxable status change in the primary residence for tax year 2019 on the parcel stated. Jim.
This application documentation looks very well in order for approval.
Okay.
Move to approve item number two.
Second.
I got a motion and a second to approve the taxable status change for primary residence stated number two. All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you.
That passes 3-0. Number three is to approve or deny the 2019 charity plan for the Planned Parenthood Association of Utah. This was continued from May 21st. The applicant here, come on up.
Yes, sir.
This is your opportunity to talk about the charity plan.
Well, I hope you all have a copy of what we presented with our application. And to remind you, Planned Parenthood has been approved for this charity plan for as long as it has been required. We began clinical services in 1988 here in Utah County. We rented space with the Utah Migrant Health Services. In 1989, we had our own property, and we have continually provided comprehensive reproductive health care to the members of Utah County since 1988. For the 2019 charitable plan, the numbers that we presented to you is that Planned Parenthood of Utah saw almost 6,500 clients from Utah County, 6,477. Of those, 45% were below 100% of poverty, and 80% were below 250% of poverty. The services, the cost of services that were provided were $717,765. So between 0 and 250% of poverty, we provided uncompensated care for 223,802.
Okay. I've got a series of questions I'd like to ask.
That'd be fine.
Appendix 2B of the nonprofit hospital nursing home charitable property and tax exempt status is our standards that we measure by.
Okay.
I'm sure you're familiar with those.
Probably not, but.
Okay. Standard number one says the institution owning the property for which the exempt status is sought must establish, and I'd like, you can tell me which one, must establish that it is an organization on a nonprofit basis to provide hospital or nursing home care, B, promote health care, or C, provide health-related assistance to the general public.
We would qualify for number one and certainly number, the last one, three.
Okay, so hospital or nursing home
care.
No,
the one after that, number four.
Promote health care.
Sorry.
two, so that'd be B and C. Is that correct? B and C, B being promote healthcare, C being provide health-related assistance to the general public.
We would qualify for both of those, sir.
Okay. Under standard four, it says the institution owning the property for which the tax exempt is sought must establish that its policies integrate and reflect the public interest.
I believe they do, sir. It would certainly be shown by the 6,477 people who rely on Planned Parenthood health care services.
Okay. Do you provide hormonal birth control without parental consent or notification?
Yes, we do, sir.
Without parental consent?
We do, sir. We follow the federal guidelines for the National Family Planning Program, Title 10, and that allows for that service. It's part of the program.
Okay. What are some of the side effects of hormonal altering drugs?
Sir, I'm not a medical provider. Are you?
No, I'm asking the question.
I could provide those for you, but I can't, in good faith, provide all side effects that would be listed for all hormonal contraception.
Okay. How does the public interest being met when there are minor girls, you know, how do you know the minor girls and their sexual partners? They're not adults, but we're, you know, you're talking about women and girls, so I'll put them as adolescents. So without consent, how is that in public interest? What's the rationale behind that?
Well, I would take you back to when Title 10 was initiated by President Nixon and George Bush Sr. It was seen as a public health program that met the needs of women who did not have a regular health care provider and could not afford health care insurance. It was set up in the public health interest of helping women have pregnancies when they chose to, when they could afford them, when they were ready to parent a child.
Only when they can afford them?
I didn't say only when they could afford them. I said when they could parent a child successfully also. And it was determined that it was in the best interests of the public health that minors be able to receive contraception without confidentially, to be able to not get pregnant unintentionally and have to deal with the physical and the social issues that they may encounter.
Without their parents' consent?
Yes, sir.
I see. Okay. So how is it in the best interest to help minor girls hide their sexual activities from their parents? How is that in the best
interest? Well, we don't ask them to do that. In fact, we counsel young women to be able to get to the point to talk to a trusted adult in their family who can assist them.
There's another class. Do you hold the informed consent class at your facilities?
For pregnancy termination?
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
What step is that in the process of termination?
I'm not sure what your question is asking
that,
for.
That's required, right? You have to have that class.
Yes, sir. And we comply with all state laws, the letter and the spirit of the law.
Okay. And you have to hold that class and within 72 hours before you refer anybody to an abortion.
Before they can make an appointment anywhere, yes.
Yeah, and you do that?
Of course.
Okay. Okay. So, under promoting public access and education and outreach, have you reached out in the past to Kids on the Move?
I'm not familiar if our education department works specifically with that organization.
Okay.
Just so that you know, we have provided approximately 750 people in Utah Valley with education and training beyond medical services.
Okay, I have a note here that in 2015 that your organization handed out, did a presentation and also handed out condoms afterwards. And basically, I'll use the words they put here, everyone was horrified by this. I thought it was completely inappropriate for the setting and the age group. Kids on the Move never want to come back with that. I guess that's part of a charity plan.
Sir, we never provide condoms to minors or anyone else as part of an education program.
Yeah.
So I beg to differ.
Okay, I'm just going off of what others have told me.
Just one quick follow-up to that.
Yes.
In the plan, this is your plan, I think, that your organization drafted.
That's what your requirement is, that we provide that plan.
It says that, it kind of talks about the 750 people, and then it says that the additional education outreach was done at Encircle, Kids on the Move, Purple Pride, and Central Respondent. Can you talk about the services that are provided to organizations?
Depends what the organization asks for. We do classes in maturation. We do classes in decision making, STD classes. We have a number of curriculums that we provide. We are responding to requests from the community.
Okay. You did mention a certain amount of care that was given to those that did not have the money or means to pay.
Mm-hmm.
An individual called up and asked for needing STD testing, and was told regardless of income it was going to be $60 for the three tests. Will that ever happen?
I would hope not. I can't imagine that one of our staff would say that.
Would it be interesting to you to know that that call was actually recorded and I have a recording of that call?
Sir, I would not be surprised that people often pish Planned Parenthood, trying to catch us saying something or other that they don't like. Right now, Utah Right to Life has an incredible, on their website, discussion of how they have interpreted our services and believing that we're not following through. Everybody has lots of opinions about Planned Parenthood. And
right.
So I would not surprise if someone reported that.
Well, I'm trying to measure according to the standards that were put out that you're measured to.
Mm-hmm.
You put in your plan general health care in Orem, Utah.
Yes, that's where our facility is located.
Do you do cholesterol screening?
I'm not sure whether that is provided on an as-needed basis.
Yeah, no, you don't, but it's in your plan. Do you do diabetes screening?
I'm sure.
No, you don't. Do you do employment and sports physicals?
We do.
That's interesting. Okay. Flu vaccinations?
Yes.
High blood pressure screenings?
Yes.
And thyroid screenings?
I'm not sure, but I can check for you.
Smoking?
Sensation? Yes.
Anemia testing?
I can check.
OK. Okay.
I am not a healthcare provider. I don't have the entire program memorized.
Those are in question. Some that are obvious that you do: physical exams, pregnancy, planning services, and cancer screening education. But it's been found that those alleged those others have not been. How about on the women healthcare in Orem? Again, in Orem, Utah, do you do colonoscopies?
No, sir. That's not part of reproductive health care.
Why do we list it then in the charity plan? How about in the hormonal replacement therapy? Infertility education?
Yes.
Menopause and midlife testing and treatment?
We do certain aspects of that. Certainly not full scope.
Okay.
Sir, I'm having trouble finding colonoscopy in our charity plan.
Just going off a snapshot.
I'm looking
off
at
the website.
I'm looking at the 2019 plan.
Sorry, that was actually off the website
that we're voting on today.
Yeah.
I don't see any of those items.
Yes, sir. I don't either.
I'm going off the website. Sorry, that was a website.
And
talking about general healthcare.
I would question whether it was a website of Planned Parenthood of Utah.
It is. It's a snapshot of it that I have. So I'm a no on this, and I know that there's some legalities to this that are that are interesting. But ultimately, when I go down through this process and look at it, we spend an inordinate amount of time and money when we're talking about life, and especially on the prosecution on the other end when somebody takes another's life, and that in our court systems, in our jails, in our prosecution, and this one here, a life. And you admitted that you do refer people, and now I get it. There is no abortion clinic in Utah County. Got it. But in many cases, it's pretty expensive to have that kind of facility in every single county or every single area. And so for consolidation purposes, they're referred to Salt Lake, because that's where the clinic is, one or two, and I'm not sure. And so for me, when I look at this, I cannot in my mind get around how we tag this as a charity plan when the life of an individual, how much is the life of an individual worth in society? I don't have those numbers, but I'm sure it's huge. And so I get the I hear from our lawyers on the side of the legal side that this is going to be bantered down through. That's the reason why I went through the standards itself, and it says must establish that its policies integrate and reflect public interest. I don't think it does. Second, the total gift to the community has to exceed the annual basis of the property tax, and referring of one individual to go get an abortion over in Salt Lake, that life itself far exceeds, in my book, any monetary value that might have got out of paying the property taxes. And so for me, I'm a no on this charity plan. I realize that you have the right to appeal it to the state, and it can go for go that route. Mm-hmm. But I've just kind of walked you through the exercises that I've had with it.
And you are aware that abortion is still legal in this country?
I'm fully aware.
All right.
So was slavery years ago. Any questions or thoughts?
Sure, I'll share my thoughts. Our role today is to review as a quasi-judiciary board whether or not the charity plan for this particular association meets the requirements as described in law. And as it has historically, I see that their charity plan continues to meet those requirements. As was noted in an earlier meeting today, I certainly value life and believe that there should be very rare exceptions for abortion. But that's not what I'm here to discuss today. I'm here to discuss if their charity plan meets the requirements as outlined in law, and given the verifiable numbers provided, the people serviced and met here, this organization, whether I agree or disagree with one particular aspect of their service, for me meets those requirements. I also had the opportunity to vote on a charity plan for IHC, which is a healthcare provider, which also provides abortions. And I thought their charity plan met the requirements. And so this action today for me is whether or not this organization has met those requirements. And I don't see anywhere in their charity plan that they haven't, just as I felt that IHC had met them. And IHC is a great partner in our community, but they provide abortions there.
They're also a good partner of ours.
And they are a partner with Planned Parenthood. So from a standard of applying this, I don't see where you haven't met the plan requirements set forth by law.
Paul, if I can ask counsel on this, so walk me through, again, really what we're acting on, because my understanding is that this board has already previously accepted the tax-exempt application. So maybe walk me through where this stands in the process and what's happened, both historically, but also specifically for this year's tax-exempt application.
Right. A few months ago, and Vicki could probably provide us the exact date, this board did approve Planned Parenthood's application for tax-exempt status. So in 2019, they've already been granted their tax-exempt status. In the property tax world, you have three different standard setting or sources of authority. One is state code. Like, there's a fourth, I guess, the Utah Constitution. The Constitution and the state code, I would consider those very controlling. Then we have administrative rules, which are designed to help bodies like the Board of Equalization make sense of the Constitution and state code. Then we have the standards of practice, and that's the fourth source. The standards of practice were developed simply by the Property Tax Division of the Utah State Tax Commission. And they're designed to just be, again, to help facilitate the property tax administration. The code, state code requires that an application be filled out. And that's what happened, and that's what was approved. The Constitution, state code, nor the administrative rules require the BOE to pass a charity plan or to approve a charity plan. That is, it is a, well, I'll say that the standards of practice is the document that provides direction to have and maintain a charity plan. Now, having said that, the charity plan is supposed to help inform the Board of Equalization as to qualification for exempt status. Certainly, you've pointed out correctly, and it is a concern that I have, that the BOE has already approved the application. And so certainly, you know, the board would need to clarify what it means in this case if it were to deny the charity plan or reject it. What does that actually mean for the tax-exempt status? And that's so something of a question mark.
So in the world of nonprofit, take any nonprofit in our community, they may have the ability to operate, provide educational services, and do so exempt from federal tax and pursuant to laws. And no action that we can take here can stop them from operating. Correct?
Oh, that's correct. Let me also clarify a couple other issues. The charity plan is really only required for medical service providers, hospitals, and nursing homes. So There are sort of two different camps. A church or an educational service provider, they wouldn't be required to provide a charity plan, and we wouldn't ask them to. So there's a difference between those two groups, but you're right. If the Board of Equalization were to deny somebody tax-exempt status, certainly that would have no impact on their ability to operate or function. And they could still be receiving some tax-exempt recognition.
On income tax. Federal level, state level. And then in this instance, not only would the organization be able to continue to operate, but also, even in this case, even at the county property tax level, it's unclear what this decision even has.
I would advise you to be very clear on what you think that impact would be.
And from your perspective, what are our obligations to be, when we look at this and we look at the criteria for tax-exempt application? I mean, this is a sacred area because we're a community that benefits from a lot of private sector resources in the forms of churches, private educational institutions, healthcare providers, et cetera. And a lot of them rely on this. And so, but we have an obligation to administer that kind of objectively and as long as they've met all of the criteria. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, you should look at this objectively. Certainly, the Board of Equalization does need to make some judgment calls. Commissioner Lee mentioned some of those. You would need to find that they do promote healthcare, that they provide health-related assistance to the general public. There were some standard, also that they don't discriminate who they give services to. This probably isn't a question in this case, but that they're a true nonprofit, meaning that the earnings don't inure to an individual.
Which some of those bylaws and
right.
tax-exempt documentation are part of the full application,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Largely then, we have issues that their services do indeed reflect public interest, that they contribute to the common good, and that they provide a gift to the community, thus lessening the government burden. Those are some of the qualifications for a medical service provider, nonprofit, seeking tax-exempt status.
Thank you. Paul, a little historical question you may or may not know the answer to. Why do healthcare providers in particular have to provide a charitable plan, but other nonprofit organizations are exempt from having to submit that plan? I'm just curious as to why this particular entity, we decided they needed to present these plans and why others were exempted from having to present.
Well, to be clear, it's not like we put Planned Parenthood in a separate category. All medical service providers.
Right. I recognize that. I'm asking why medical service providers have to provide a charitable plan, but say churches or other nonprofits don't. I'm just curious as to what the rationale was behind that.
And I don't have an authoritative answer for you. I couldn't tell you, exactly why the legislature has done that. I can tell you that from my point of view, is that sometimes it's hard to determine if a medical service provider is truly charitable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, the different categories of exclusive use are educational, right? And so I think we give them if you can determine that they're providing an educational experience, then we find that is automatically determined to be in the common good, right? It's a gift to the community that you're educating. And so we don't have that requirement. Religious, I think that, you say, look, if we can establish that you are a religion, then we give you the benefit of the doubt that you're doing something that's good for our community. You're helping us, train up our kids to do good things. And then charitable is the other option. You get a charity the Red Cross or something. Once you establish that they're doing that charitable work, then you're sort of satisfied. When you get into the medical, nursing home, hospital environment, I think it's just more difficult to determine if what they're doing is a gift to the community or is it self-serving. You know, are they doing it to earn money, or are they doing it to help the community? So it's more difficult to make that determination. So we have this added charitable plan to help you figure out if they're meeting those requirements.
And I might add, I think there's a distinction there as well, because when you're comparing like a hospice organization or a hospital, so many of them actually are for profit.
Right.
And so it's hard when you're comparing it, just because someone's a nonprofit ownership, why do they get that benefit? Which is why I think it's requested to have the charitable plan. Whereas right. when you're dealing with services where people are not normally providing them on a for-profit basis, then there's more of an assumption that the tax exemption qualifies.
Yeah, that's a good point. A church, for example, right? There's not many for-profit churches out there, and so you figure that you're doing it for a charitable purpose, whereas there are a lot of for-profit medical.
And I guess they would look at education the same way, even though there are private institutions of education that are for-profit, right, essentially. But they're treated slightly differently there.
Yeah, and if they're for-profit, they wouldn't qualify for the tax-exempt status. Right.
But because of the numbers, perhaps, that's why they're not required to bring forth the charitable plan. Because obviously, I mean, there could be an educational institution that's educating or promoting practices that the general public might disagree with or have objections to, right? Or we might object to on a personal basis. It could be a school of communism, and you know, obviously I would have problems with that being a promoted educational purpose, but they could still fall under the charitable plan.
Yes, they could. Well, they wouldn't need a charitable plan.
Right. They wouldn't even need to put forth it. They wouldn't even need to put forth a charitable plan because they're education.
Right.
It's just interesting. It helps me understand why we're holding certain entities to a higher standard.
Well, and it comes from the standards of practice.
Right.
Is where it comes from. It's not Utah County.
Well, right. And Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I do want to point out, Paul does a great job, but I would like to point out that historically, though, I believe this was a legislative response also to a case that went up to the Utah Supreme Court that's actually cited in the standards of practice, which was Utah County versus Intermountain Healthcare way back in 1985. So this law and this requirement probably is a result of that court case in which Utah County at that time had a question about the charitable qualification of Intermountain Healthcare. And Intermountain Healthcare, there's been other case law that as we've looked at this in the past where that's been pointed out that at times counties have questioned whether our main largest healthcare provider in the state did in fact qualify for that property tax exemption. I know recently in the last decade, Cache County went to the Supreme Court over a question similar with IHC on that. So I think this requirement probably came out of that initial case, and that probably dates back to why healthcare providers in particular were kind of singled out for this particular requirement versus, like, say, another charitable organization, you know, that would not be required to give us a some sort of charitable report every year.
Who prevailed in that case?
What was that?
Who prevailed in that case?
Say that. I'm sorry.
Who prevailed in that case?
Who prevailed? I believe I exceeded.
That's what I was going to say. It goes back to that IHC, Vicki Westergaard, Kirk Otter's office. And so when the charity plans come through, I go through each one of those standards that's listed in the standards of practice that goes back to that court case to make sure that each section is mentioned in the charity plan. And the Planned Parenthood met every one of those standards.
Thank you.
So I'll reaffirm. Standard 4 says, must establish that its policies integrate and reflect the public interest. I have a daughter. I know that both of my other fellow commissioners have daughters too. I would be to think that an organization, one, is out there, providing an education on sexual activities to one of my, I don't have a minor daughter now, but if she was minor, to one of my minor daughters, and even prescribing some sort of treatments medically, does not even come close in my book to establishing public interest. I think that's way off the charts, besides the abortion issue and pushing that to Salt Lake County. I think on those little standards alone for me, I again will be voting no on this. I understand what we're going through, and we're doing a legal exercise with this. I did signal it last time that was going to be the case, and I still feel the same way. Because standard four does says must establish, and I don't think that really establishes. Not even close.
I'll just update. Utah County actually prevailed in that case. So,
yeah. Thank you.
But it provided the framework of this, basically the framework that standard two go that the standards go through.
Okay.
Let the record state that I stand corrected.
You better stand then.
Yeah, okay.
Oh yeah. Any other discussion? All right, seeing a motion to be in order.
Okay, I will move that we approve the 2019 charitable plan as outlined in regular agenda item number 3.
Second.
I've got a motion and a second to approve the charitable plan as stated in agenda item number 3. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Aye. That's 2-1. So Commissioner Ivey and Commissioner Ainge are the affirmative and Commissioner Lee's in the negative. Okay, number 4 is to approve or deny a 2019 new privilege tax exemption application.
Ms. Blackett was out of town, so she requested that we call her for if you have any questions on this.
Maybe, huh?
Hello?
Oh, there we go.
Wendy?
There we go. Hi, can you hear
Hello?
Us?
Hello?
Can you hear us?
Hello?
Wendy, can you hear us?
Oh,
this is
I
Sally.
Can hear you. Yes.
Yeah, this is Sally with the Board of Equalization. I'm going to send you to the room so you can present your case. Are you ready?
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I was trying to think who you were.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Wendy, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, we are on. We're on your item on our Board of Equalizations. That's to approve or deny the new privilege tax exempt status.
Okay.
Would you like to make some comments to that?
Okay, you're sort of breaking up. I only got part of what you were saying. You're doing what?
We're on your item at the Board of Equalizations with a new privilege tax exempt application that you put forward.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you want to talk to that, or did you want to listen from staff first?
Well, I don't have anything to say.
Okay.
So
all right.
I guess I'll hear what you have to say.
All right. Very good.
She's applied for the privilege tax exemption for a hangar out at the airport. She does not use it for commercial purposes, and so therefore she's eligible for the exemption.
And this meets.
I don't use it for commercial or for business.
Criteria.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions from the commissioners?
None from me.
Legal?
Oh, you do?
Well, so I don't really even know what we're talking about here. So maybe help me understand.
Provide a little background. So this is government property. So this is, I believe Provo City owns the hangar. And,
yes.
If you use government property for a commercial purpose and you make it for a profit, then you're assessed a privilege tax. And in this situation, she's saying, I don't own it for a commercial purpose, therefore I'm exempt from the privilege tax.
Right. I don't own it for commercial purpose. I just, personal.
She's renting it, right? So, sorry, I used the word.
Yeah, I'm just renting it, yeah.
So she's using public property.
Members of the board, if I could just ask one question, Ms. Blackett. Ms. Blackett, the lease for the airport, by the way, this is Bert Harvey with the Clerk Otter's office, the lease of the property, is that in your own personal name or is that in the name of, or is that in another name?
My own personal name.
Okay. And you use it for own personal use? You don't use it for any type of commercial use or anything else like that?
Nope.
Okay. I'd like to point out to the board that she submitted her tax returns and to show that she was not taking any type of personal exemption, business exemption for the airport hangar. In these privileged tax cases, really all we're trying to establish, and we only require them to do an initial application. Once they become a new lessee, we just try to establish that they are using it for a personal use, that it's in the name of a person, not in the name of a corporation. Ms. Blackett really meets that criteria for in this case for exemption of the privilege tax.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. A motion will be in order.
Move that we approve regular agenda item number 4.
Second.
We got a motion and a second to approve agenda item number 4. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. All right. Thank you, Wendy.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, now we'll move to agenda item number 5, which is to approve and deny a new privilege tax exempt application for Brian Huffaker. Do you want to speak to that, Vicki?
This is the same as the last one from his tax return. It did not show any deductions for commercial. It looks like it's private use also. I sent him a letter to come, but I don't have any problem with this one being approved.
Okay. Any questions?
No.
Seeing none, motion to be in order.
Move to approve regular agenda item number 5.
Second.
We got a motion and a second to approve agenda item number 5. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. Number 6 is to approve or deny the 2019 new property tax exemption application as stated in number 6. This is for Intermountain Healthcare Services.
When they turned in their original initial applications this year, they did not list account numbers. So Bert and I and Paul had a big meeting with Mr. Woods from IHC and their new legal counsel, and we were able to work out which accounts they were actually requesting, and so that's what this is these three. One is for the new hospital in Saratoga Springs. I'm sorry, not the hospital, it's a clinic in Saratoga Springs, a PT clinic, and there's one in Orem and Orem Imaging. These are new buildings that they built in the past year.
Okay. Any questions? Motion will be in order.
I move that we approve regular agenda item number 6.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mm-hmm. That passes 3-0. Number 7 is to approve and deny a new property tax exempt an application for Utah Regional Housing.
And they are here.
They're here. Do you want to speak to it first, or do you want to go ahead? You're up. Since you're up.
Ask me questions. I can tell you. So Utah Regional Housing is a DBA. The full name is the Provo Nonprofit Housing Development Corp, doing business as Utah Regional Housing. We've moved outside of Provo into the county for a number of things. These townhomes are our first purchase that are going into the Community Land Trust. And the Community Land Trust does not have its exemption yet fully approved. And so these are being bought into Utah Regional Housing for the time being. These properties will all be remodeled, and then they will be resold to individuals that are between 60 and 120% of area median income. But right now, they're going into the nonprofit for rehabilitation and get them ready to resell.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for the good work you do.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions?
I have some questions. So, Paul, can you address, this is kind of a mid-year application or a new application, and have the requirements been met for this?
Well, it is a mid-year application. I believe when a nonprofit purchases a home, when a nonprofit purchases a property, when they acquire a property, they have 30 days. Is that right? Is it 30 days to apply? And I think they did apply within the 30 days. So their timing is appropriate. Now, if you were to grant the exemption, it would be on a prorated basis, right? So, assuming it was owned by a non-profit, company, the previous owner would be required to pay the taxes for the first part of the year, and then the exemption would be allowed for the rest of this year. Now, whether they meet all the requirements, other requirements, I had a quick question. Well, first, I believe we probably exempt out other properties that...
All of our properties.
Yeah, the properties. Mm-hmm. In this case, one of the issues with low-income housing is that usually it's nice to know that the rents are sub-market rents, right? And you mentioned that they're income-based, right?
Yes.
There was a comment in the application that the current rents would be used to remodel the townhome. I just didn't know if they were at market, below market, and, you know, perhaps even if they're at market, the money's probably going back into the, you know, just a, I might know if the board wanted to have a question or had a concern about the current rent amount, or if what it's being used for is enough to satisfy the board on charitable.
For me, it's worth asking the question. You know, whenever we deal with, again, areas that compete, both nonprofit and for-profit, right? And there are some landlords out there who may want to acquire these homes, even though they're lower income rental, right? I want to make sure that we're careful in the way that we, and we don't just kind of pick winners and losers. So I guess there's a series of steps we go through. And the first question is affordable housing just in of itself an approved purpose for tax exemption?
Yeah, well, it would fall under charitable, so it would be, the board has traditionally approved when a nonprofit entity provides rental housing at below market rent, then the board has traditionally considered that a charitable
purpose. Is that condition built in any way to the exemption?
No, they would have to... I believe they reapply every year. Is that right, Vicki? Yeah. So every year they would reapply, and they would answer a number of questions. Has the use changed? Do you receive revenue for this? And they would describe the revenue, where hopefully they say we're still charging these rents that are income-based and below market. And so there's an annual review. And if they start charging market rents, then on the annual review, the BOE could pull the exempt status.
And obviously, go ahead, Vicki.
We noticed that it talks about this year, and some counties do this, is they audit ones to make sure that, instead of just the one-page, two-page form they fill out each year, they actually make them provide financial documents to make sure they're still doing that. So that's an option, that could be done in the future.
So from my perspective, obviously, I do feel like the Housing Authority is clearly providing a charitable purpose. And so that's why they provide this great service and they've received tax exemption. And I think that there are two issues why I raise these questions. One is we don't want to create the scenario where anyone out there who wants to own a portfolio of multifamily housing can just incorporate as a nonprofit and say, hey, I'm tax exempt. Right, so I think that those conditions are appropriate, and I think the Housing Authority will be able to demonstrate that. And the second is, I think that this is a new area that even the Housing Authority is talking about moving into. These new properties are not the exact same historical use, if I understand correctly, because they're going to be part of a newer land trust kind of plan.
Correct. Yeah, correct. And just a couple of points. Since we just purchased these, we are subject to current leases. And so we have, I think, two of the six where the rents would be higher than we would charge, but we're subject to those leases. By the time those leases expire, we will have the money to rehab them and move them on. And in any case, if we were charging more on those two, we're charging market, any money that we make goes back into developing additional low-income and moderate-income housing.
And, I mean, for me, I think this is an important process. I'm comfortable with this. I'm ready to support this. I think I'm comfortable with this on a go-forward basis. And I would just ask the Housing Authority to to even highlight more the great work that you're doing. And there's co-located services with other county departments that are providing service to those who need low-income housing, right? And so there's a way to create that differentiation of what's happening is clearly deserving of tax exemption, as opposed to any landlord who happens to incorporate as a nonprofit.
Right. Yeah, and go ahead and vote. I have something else I'd like to talk about tax exemption wise, just to bring up. But if this is appropriate,
it's probably not the forum for it. But we're ready for a vote. Motion to be in order then.
Move that we approve regular agenda item number 7.
Second.
We had a motion and a second to approve agenda item number 7. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0. That is the end of our meeting. We'll conclude, and then if you would like to just talk to us individually or whatever, you can. Motion to adjourn will be in order.
So moved.
Second.
I had a motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're now adjourned.